Fine, so.
No, no, what do you mean? Hang up. Too late.
No,
it's
fine. I'm moving into the other room, that's all.
Oh, okay.
I got my laptop.
Hi, Tracy's friend.
Is that Fred?
Yeah, that was Fred.
Hey, Fred!
Tell Fred that he just made it onto the Dungeon Master Roundtable podcast.
Congrats.
You just made it onto the Dungeon Master Roundtable podcast.
Oh, you guys are recording right now?
Not just yet.
Okay. Who am I talking to?
Randall and Sam.
We are recording.
Oh, we are recording. Okay.
Yeah. How's it going, Fred?
Doing all right. So we totally are recording this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is recording right now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, hello, geeky America. I'm going to get back to my ice cream sundae now.
I think you might give us a little bit too much credit on the scope of the audience.
Yeah, maybe just a little. Just a scoop.
Hey, it's more than just my dad.
Hey, wait, where'd he go? What kind of ice cream are you eating, Fred?
Oh, I'm in the other room already. He's eating Häagen-Dazs 5-ingredient, milk chocolate, and I got him the dark chocolate hot fudge sundae stuff.
Oh, I had peppermint ice cream tonight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I had Rocky Road.
Oh, it's an ice cream night for everyone. That is awesome.
Yeah, because it's snowing outside, and that's when I always crave ice cream. Like, I don't like it in the summer because it's, like, too thick, and it makes me feel like, I don't know, it's too rich or something. But in the winter, I love it.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's odd, though.
Oh, so how's everyone this evening?
Not bad. So do we know who we're inviting tonight? Who's on? It's just us three right now. So
yeah, I was IMing on Skype. I was chatting with Thad and talking about how, you know, it's basically the core four of us, and then you guys are talking about maybe a couple of guests. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a good way to run. I don't have any objections to that. I think that works great. And I think we need to. I know we have some people that are on the show a lot. But if we start getting other people that would like to be on, we can certainly rotate those other folks in and out. You know, I don't have an objection with that. So, and it may be the best way to handle it. So
cool. I think that's the conclusion we came to as well. So,
okay.
So did you hear that, America? You can talk to us and maybe you'll get on the podcast next time.
That's right. I do have a suggestion. I mean, I did, I thought it would be great to have Dread Gazebo and his wife, Mominatrix, I think is how her handle's pronounced.
Yeah.
On the show, because you know, I think it's be a good idea to talk to actual couples that game, and have I think it would be a neat subject for the show. So you know.
You know, you just talked to Fred, so hey, we already did that.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, sorry, Mominatrix, I guess you're out.
No.
But they seem pretty cool. So.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. They do seem really cool. But, okay, well, so, well, we still haven't solved the problem of who to invite tonight.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Well, I mean, I guess on the Twitter stuff, we had already talked about Keto and Sly Flourish. And Will Samurai. So.
Okay.
I only happen to include them on the tweet because, well, I mean, other than that, I know them and I know they like to be on the show. But I was just sort of replying. I was doing a reply all to a tweet from the other day that talked about it. So.
Right.
It wasn't meant to be a this is the only people that are allowed on the show kind of thing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, and that's fine. So they always have good things to say, usually. So
yeah, except that Mike guy, you know.
Yeah.
You let him on, and he just takes over.
You got to give him 5 minutes. Oh man.
So I'm putting in the chat on some topic ideas that I got.
All right.
So Tracy, you've been a little busy. Right.
You want to talk about time travel? Because I totally am doing that in one of my campaigns right now.
Time travel, huh? Can I be the counterpoint?
Well, I don't.
As much as Tracy does, as much as Tracy hates Dungeons, I hate time travel.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't like it. It is messy. I think it's the last resort when a story is in trouble, and unless the story happens to specifically involve time travel as a as part of the story, as opposed to, I mean, in other words, if it's like Doctor Who, for example,
yeah, you mean it's better to use it as the story rather than it's the deus ex machina,
right?
To get them out of something. Oh no, no, no! This is part of the story in my game. I needed a way to get the PCs all involved in something that happened in the past in my game world, my homebrew world,
okay.
and I needed to explain a particular event that almost wiped out the dwarves, actually, off the face of the planet. And they wanted to know, they needed to know what happened so that they would know why they needed to fix it. So,
oh, okay.
And, you know, of course, things being as they are and my group being as they are, it turned out that they ended up causing it. Of course, I hope they don't listen to this because they don't know that yet. But
whoops.
But they,
spoiler alert.
Yeah. No, so some interesting stuff happened, and it turns out they started. So it creates this weird paradox, but yeah, it's interesting. I think that's a good topic we can talk about because it has really good points and really bad points as well. So,
yeah, I think if it's handled in a way that doesn't, like you said, doesn't give it a doesn't make it an easy out for the story, then I think or to resolve uncomfortable plot holes, then I think it can work. But yeah, it's real. It's like playing with fire, you know. It's like, yeah. So, but sure, that'd be a great topic.
Yeah.
So,
what else do we got? What does that mean? Limiting players' rules options. Why less is more? What is that? What does that mean in the words of Chris Tulock?
I think he's saying that, you know, you don't have to include everything in the kitchen sink when you do an adventure or in a campaign, that it's okay to limit people, let's say, just to essentials, builds, or, I don't know, just in general, that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, really... that's, yeah.
I see.
I mean, I've done it. When I started up my second game group, I basically told them I didn't want Player Handbook 3 races. And the reason I didn't want those races in classes is because I didn't have the book, to be honest. And it was like, I mean, that seems like a really strange way of doing it, but you know, it actually fit. And a lot of those races were kind of out there and didn't have a real good place in my world. And while they might exist, I didn't want them as player characters. And so, you know, I just basically said no Player Handbook 3 and, you know, left with that. But their characters were already established. It wasn't a big deal. So, you know, there's already a gamut of things you can run. So it really was none of my players went, oh, you know, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my demand was like, and this is great with my characters because they're not a lot of writers in my group. And so it was like, well, I tell you what, if you want to be one of those characters, I'm going to need a pretty lengthy backstory as to why you're even here. And then that was immediately like, oh, well, never mind then, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's mostly about expectations. If you lay that out right at the beginning and you say, hey, look, I have this idea for a storyline for a campaign and I want to run it, but it has some limitations and here they are.
Right.
So if we run this or if I run this, if you guys want to play in this story, you tell them a little bit about the story and what you have in mind. Then you tell them, you know, here are the limits.
Right.
And then it's about expectations. No one's going to walk away from that conversation and suddenly say, oh, but I really want to play that gnome in Athos,
mm-hmm.
you know, or I really want to play that monk that you told me you weren't going to allow in this campaign from its very inception.
Right.
You know, it's about expectations. So you set that expectation such that they're not going to violate those right from the very beginning. It's a little bit different if you tell everybody, hey, we're going to start a game, make your characters, you know, decide roles and then go away and make characters and then come back and then they all come to the table with these classes that you were going to disallow but you never told them. That's not, you know.
Yeah,
you have I would be upset too as a player if that happened.
No, you're absolutely right. You got to tell them right at the beginning. Or if people are like tossing around character concepts and stuff like that, I'll say, tell you what, I've got my world. You know, here's my, you know, here's my background for the campaign setting and stuff. Read this before you decide, because there are going to be some things that probably aren't appropriate or wouldn't work well. And, you know, and that seems to work out. At least it does for, has for me in the past anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Tracy, do you concur?
Yeah. I do. Well,
she's over there asleep.
No, I'm just getting like a gazillion IMs all at once. No, I'm now designing stuff and trying to design things for every possible character combination and power and it's too much. So I think for DMs, they totally should limit it, because sometimes I want to limit it when I'm designing things. So that's how I feel.
No, I think you're right.
Because if you have monsters that key off certain abilities, you want to do a power that only triggers on a melee basic, when hit by a melee basic, but it turns out that they're playing essential spiders that use their melee basic all the time, that suddenly just throws off the monster's power, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. So it can get really tricky if you don't limit things.
Yeah, or the converse, which is this monster has this really awesome power that's really powerful, but by balancing, you know, it should only happen maybe once or twice an encounter, and you set it, and then it turns out none of the players ever do the triggering action, and that creature never gets to use that power, not even one time. It sort of takes the coolness factor out of that character. Right. So you also don't want that. You don't want it to happen all the time, but you don't want it to only happen never.
Well, one of the things I do is design my monsters around that. I don't design my monsters so that any specific character action will trigger it. So I don't use those kind of keyed powers like that, because I know that that very thing might happen. And so they're either very generic, so that regardless of the power that a character uses, it does it. You know, like for example, any ranged attack or, you know, any melee attack. And then go from there. That way you can still have really cool things that happen and not necessarily have to be keyed off a specific power. So, and you avoid that very thing that you're talking about. So,
yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's honestly impossible, I think, to design most things these days that don't key off something that may or may not happen because somebody's made some weird choice.
Right.
So we also saw it with the crit range, like having things that triggered on a crit seemed really cool for a while until the crit range got kept getting extended to like 18 to 20 and even wider.
So do we before we go any further, do we actually want to invite more people to this conversation? I feel like I keep asking that, but it's been like 10 minutes and we haven't invited anybody.
Well, if it's
not that, I mean, you know, if nobody wants to talk to anybody else, I'm happy just talking to you two, but you know. Looks like Thaddeus wants on.
Yeah, why don't you invite him on in?
That guy?
He's not in here. I think you started the call, so you
have. Oh, so I have to do the hat? Okay, yeah. Hold on.
You can go up to conversation and then do add people.
All right, here we go. All right, add people. Thaddeus. Add to call. There we go.
Watch him not answer. This is why we all hate him.
Well, he got me a VT invite. I can't hate him too much.
Yeah. Do we? Is that a topic we want to discuss?
Answering the phone?
No.
What?
Yes, answering the phone. the virtual table.
Well, sure. We can talk about that too. I've had limited experience with it, but. Mainly because my time hasn't allowed me to sit down and play, but the one experience was pretty damn cool. So
yeah, I've had a little bit of experience, not extensive experience, but more than like one time. So
hey, there he is.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Not bad.
Yeah, I totally like jumped the gun, so I'm the one that like started the call. So.
It's all good.
Which is great, because if my internet goes out, then it'll drop all of you at once. So,
yeah, that's okay. I'll call back if that happens.
Yeah, it should. I mean, I've got a crystal clear connection right now, so I'm knocking on wood and crossing my fingers and such. Yeah. So.
Well, do you want to add a couple more people?
Who do you want to?
we'll cap it off at 5. You guys can disagree with me if you'd like, but I think 5 is a really good number in terms of the number of people on the podcast.
Well, Mike's available.
Should I try to add Mike?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. The call is going out to Mike Shea.
Yeah, the list of people that I started doing was pretty long. I think I stopped at like 14 or 15. So.
Hey, Thad, you're a little on the faint side. I don't know if anyone else is experiencing that.
Yeah, he's friends, Mike.
I'm trying to set up over here, so I'm not.
Oh, no worries.
I've got my gain down, so hold on.
All right.
He's off pouring himself a drink, probably.
Actually, oh, that's what I forgot to do, because you guys called early.
Hold on.
Not you guys. That was Randall.
That's my drink, right?
Oh, that sounds beautiful, man.
I actually don't have a drink either because of the call. I was like, oh, crap, I got to plug in my headset really fast.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, guys.
We're never going to let you live it down.
I know, I'm sorry. Y'all, it's better. See, I'm making up for the time that Tracy woke me out of my nap to get the call. I was all set, ready to go, had the headphones on. I'd been watching a show or something. I was just really, I like that.
I woke you up.
Are you going to, well, I got a Twitter or something over my cell phone. And it was like, oh, crap, the call. But it was awesome. So,
right on.
And I watched a couple episodes of Battlestar Galactica before logging on, so I got that in. Okay, so I was good to go.
Nice.
Just a diet.
Better now?
Oh, sounds great.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I just have Diet Mountain Dew tonight, guys, so going lightweight tonight.
I've got nothing. I'm parched.
Yeah, Mike Shea still hasn't picked up the phone.
He's away. He's getting slippers, I think.
No, okay. Okay, so look.
So his little foozies don't get cold.
At least it's not crackers.
Yeah, he was eating crackers.
He sent me a message that said AFK getting slippers.
Okay, so I need to dial him again. Is that how that works?
No, he's added to the call. I think he can actually.
Oh, he can now pick up the call. Okay, outstanding. Okay.
So we're going 5 or 6 tonight.
I think 5. I think that'd be best. I'm agreeing with Sam at this point.
All right. Does someone want to get on Twitter and send some messages out to like Cato and Aaron and tell them that they're not going to be on tonight because I think they are kind of expecting to be on.
Oh, well.
Like I'm okay with not having them on. I just don't want to record it and then have them hear it like 2 days later and be like, "Oh, I thought we were going to have I was going to be on a show."
I just totally failed my diplomacy role.
Also, I don't see Mike in the window anymore, so maybe he can't add himself to the call. Or maybe I just don't see it. Well, I mean, if we want to have 6 tonight because we have people expect... I'm not opposed to it. I don't care, actually.
You know what, guys?
I think going forward, we need to say, like, okay, our cap is 5 and it's going to be these people. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So. Should it be 5 or should it be 6?
Well, I mean, it can be 6 as far as I'm concerned.
4 core and 2 guests.
Yeah, I think having more than 6 gets a little hairy, so.
He's ready for a call. I'll get on Twitter in just a few minutes, and I'll start letting everybody know.
Okay.
So go ahead and add Mike at this point.
We just have to learn to say no. And you know, if people's feelings are hurt because we say no, I don't think that's our fault. Because we can't have... We've tried it before, and we can't get 9 people on the podcast.
Yeah. That's why I say we should.
Yeah.
We should actually say, okay, here's our cap. I mean, so this is recording right now, so everybody who listens is going to hear this. But you know, our cap is going to be 6, you know, 3 or 4 core people, and 2 or 3 others, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
Right.
Good evening, Mike Shea.
Good evening.
How are you tonight, sir?
I am very well.
Were the crackers good?
I'm a little cold.
So we hear. Yeah, slippers and everything.
Yep.
Yeah, it's chilly out here, too. You're in Indiana, right?
No, I'm in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you're in D.C. Okay. I couldn't remember where you were at.
Yep. Well, Indiana is where I don't want to go.
Yeah, here in Ithaca, it's about 20 degrees outside right now, so it's pretty cold.
That's
We're not talking about it. It's balmy, okay? This is all just in my mind.
Yes. Oh, I see. Yeah. That could be. Yes.
I got 29 here in the Midwest, so yeah. It's supposed to get to 19 tonight or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freaking cold for December, that's for sure. I blame the Canadians. So
it's a safe bet.
It's totally their fault. Why can't they just keep the cold air up there?
I told them to all stop breathing at once. So.
Oh, okay.
You should bring Phil Menard in here just for like 2 seconds for us to yell at him about the cold. And
I told him on Twitter the other day, like last week or something, him and Geeky Lindsay and a couple other folks that are from Canada. It's like, you guys need to stop all breathing out at once because you're sending a blast of cold wind down here. It's not cool. So. But.
I got a message from her, and she said that our secret message about the Dragon Child dice bags was a little too secret, so.
Okay.
Well, we not only put it only 15 seconds into the song, but we actually said in a tweet that you should go actually listen to that 15 seconds. Anyway, that's fine.
Yeah, I just think, you know. How many listeners do we actually have? A couple hundred, and how many of them are going to rush out and buy dice bags? But you know, we'll promote it here too.
Is she sponsoring us? Do we all get free dice bags?
Yeah. Why don't you write her about getting one? Tell me how that works out.
I do own one already, but
just
you know.
be careful. It might come with a snake in it. You know,
or more specifically, my wife owns one, but yeah.
Yeah, I actually have one as well. I really, really like my dice bag that she made. It's really high quality and excellent, and I really appreciate that I bought it, and it was cheap, and she sent it right to me, and she's all around awesome. There you go. There's your ad, Lindsay.
Oh, yeah, I'll concur with that. I mean, it's a great little – it just puts in a little card and everything else and
yeah.
A little note. It's really cool. Yeah, she does a good
honestly,
job.
Honestly, I'm thinking about if the coupon codes don't get all used up, then I'm just going to go buy some of them for my players in my D&D games. So. Yeah.
Well, that's
Either
a good
way,
idea.
It'll save me money, so.
So.
I have too many players. I can't afford to do that.
So I know we already talked about it a little bit, but do we want to see what Mike and Thaddeus have to say about the limiting players rules options?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assumed we weren't done with the conversations. That's why I wanted to start bringing people in so we could talk more in depth.
What's the question?
Yeah.
So Chris Tulak tweeted earlier to me, here's a topic, limiting players' rules options, why less is more or not.
Oh, I got lots to say on that.
No, no kidding.
I think Mike
is
the deuce.
On that?
Yeah, I have lots to say about everything.
See, this is why that Randall and Tracy and I talked before we offered you guys a slot in here, because we knew that once we did, we wouldn't be able to say anything else. So,
well, but what's really funny is I still didn't have a chance to say anything, but it's all good.
I even said, "Aunt Tracy, your thoughts."
Randall and Sarah, thanks for joining us on the Mike and Thaddeus show. It was great having you. We'll take it from here.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
Jeez, what am I, chopped liver?
Well, you're recording, right?
Sam, you're
so you need me, right?
Sam, you're already on like
it's
six.
The Bad and Mike show with our producer Sam.
I'll take that. That's a good one.
Sam, podcast Dylan. So you know.
Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So are we bringing anyone else into the call before we continue, or is it we're going to go with the five of us?
I don't care either way. I'm making no decisions.
Okay.
What five? There's only four of us.
Okay.
What? Where did you learn to count, brother?
You've got to count yourself, too.
We're the one that's not seen.
No, I'm just the producer, remember?
Oh. You know, the producer is the quiet one that sits behind all the equipment, right?
Do we have a group
producer...
chat going tonight?
No, the producer can make small comments, too.
Yeah, that's true. Off
it's
camera,
basically though. A way of getting another host on the show without having to pay a host and a producer. You're like, you're the producer, but you can talk.
Yeah.
That happened on Buzz Out Loud.
Happens on a lot of things. It's what they did with like Loveline. They fired the co-hosts, and now just like it's Dr. Drew and his producer and the call screener. Like basically all the guys who weren't making a lot of money, they're like, yeah, you guys talk too.
They probably don't make any more money. It's just it was an easy way for MTV to make more or to save money on the cost or whatever.
Yeah. I don't think MTV runs it anymore though.
Well, whoever does, yeah. Yeah.
So it's Chris Tulak posted this thing?
Yes, he did.
Let's go find it.
What happened?
Isn't that kind of contrary to the Wizards of the Coast?
No.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Thinking like, hey, don't buy much of our products, just buy a little bit.
No, that's not what he's saying. No, what he's saying is that when a GM or DM starts a game, they should consider it okay to put limits on the options that players have.
And they're doing this for the entire series too.
Oh yeah, well, people have been doing that since Player's Handbook 3 came out.
Well, they've been doing it forever, I think.
Yeah.
Right? They're like, oh. Yeah, psionic powers. Yeah, no, we're not going to use that.
No Minotaurs.
Yeah. In my first game, it was PHB 1 only, so.
Yep.
Oh, I don't know what I'd do. Well, I guess I'd do a Warlock.
But... Problem is, PHB has all the broken stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't really help you.
I would have been a bard, but instead I was a rogue.
See, that's the thing. I think I would... I automatically go straight to PHB 2 when I start thinking about classes.
Yeah, see, now I didn't see anything broken about the first one. Yeah, I know, Mike, you're all about the mathematics, and I'm cool with that. But to me, it was perfectly serviceable, so...
It's perfectly serviceable up to a certain point, and then things just start, you know, getting out of hand. And I'm actually not sure that it's not pervasive in the other books, too. It's just I mainly saw PHB 1 stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, and you played Epic and Paragon through, and so.
Right, and that's where it just gets weird.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it would get weird if you did. You know, I saw some PHB 2 and PHB 3 stuff that was pretty wacky, too.
Yeah, 3 is the only one that I don't allow in my campaigns, and I was telling him earlier it was because, well, I don't have that book. So yeah. I basically told him, look, guys, I don't have the book, so, you know.
Who needs a book these days?
That's right. Well, they don't all have accounts either, so.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
So, look, how sweet.
Did DDI update today?
Yeah, I think so.
That's my task for after the call is over with.
How have I not spent all day playing with the character builder? Oh, well.
Yeah, I think limiting. I think there's lots of good reasons to limit player options. Some of them mechanical, some of them story. And I mean, sometimes you don't want to. You know, sometimes it's just fun to let everything go. Let everything go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of the god mode where you get everything. But I think I don't know. I mean, how many powers? I gotta go look it up again. I looked it up before, but like how many feats and how many powers exist these days? What would you guess?
Probably 1,500.
Someone posted this just the other day, and I'm trying to...
3,031.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
3,
do you know, a common limit that one of the guys that runs a game that I actually play in, one of the few games I play rather than run, his limit is no PHB 3 and nothing from Dragon Magazine.
Yeah, I could see a lot of people saying no Dungeon, no Dragon.
Right.
Yeah, because those seem even more broken than some of the PHB 1 stuff.
Yeah, they could be. Do you guys have a guess at how many powers exist?
5,000.
7,476.
Wow. Yeah, see, this is what I was talking about, guys. Way too many.
Right, too many. So I think that's where putting some limits on it make a lot of sense. That's, you know, I mean, I'm the big proponent for the Essentials Only games.
Yeah.
I'd like to run one. I'd like to try one out and see what it's like. And
I'm actually running one.
Players would be very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm running one, and it's amazing because I think it's teaching me that Essentials actually hit its target because for just in one particular aspect, for example, the two players that I have that have played Classic 4E, I guess we're calling it, aren't extremely happy with the Essentials builds, especially the first Essentials book builds. But the two that aren't really familiar with 4th edition, they love the builds. So, and they don't mind playing them. So it's sort of about I'm trying to quit saying so I notice it every time I say it and then I pause. But it's funny that you say that because it is actually a different experience, and I'm not sure yet because I've only run 3 sessions. I'm not sure whether it's placebo all in my head or if it really is a true difference. We're only playing – we're starting at first level, so I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, it's hard to see what's going to happen over time. You know, I think the hard part for me is that where it really makes a difference is Paragon and Epic tier, where you're not going to see that massive – you know, that massive curve in scaling power. But that also means that the players might get bored, fast, because they don't have all those tweaky options that they have if you open everything up.
Right. Well, that's the issue. The 2 players that I have that are used to Classic 4E that have built several Classic 4E characters, they aren't happy with the lack of options. That's the thing that they're complaining about.
Well, it was like the Assassin for me. When I saw the Essentials build for the Assassin, I was, like, disappointed because I really liked the original Assassin build with the shrouds and stuff like that. Thought it was awesome. And then the Essentials Assassin came out, and I go, this looks like a hopped-up rogue. Yeah. You know? And right. So it didn't differentiate it enough for me. And so, I mean, that's one example, and I love the Essentials stuff. I just – in fact, I'll play them side-by-side with the regular 4E characters, even if that's not a good thing. But – if someone wants to play an Essentials character, I'll let them. I just think that you'll probably end up, like Mike saying, at the end, it's kind of the same stuff over and over again, just more power. And so you're going to have either our role-playing options or something that adds interest to that campaign for those high-level characters. So,
Well, I have to say, though, in defense of Essentials, because I feel like I just sort of ragged on Essentials, but in defense of Essentials – the one really good thing is I haven't had to tweak the monsters very much. I'm used to, in Classic 4E, having to tweak monsters and sort of tweak their power level up so that the characters don't just completely demolish them with no challenge. And I haven't had to do that in the Essentials game. So that's saying something. And that's just at first level, even.
Sam, what level did you say you had to tweak monsters?
It depends. With my face-to-face group, they're very tactically minded and they're very, very good at optimizing. And so I basically had to tweak from about level 3 on. But for a couple of my other games, for one of my online games, I didn't have to tweak until I think 8th level. Usually upper heroic is when I feel like it's really important. Like it's mid to low heroic. It's like give or take, you know, it depends on the situation, whether I feel like I should tweak the power of the monsters. I always tweak something, but usually it depends on what my goal is. If I really want to make a fast combat, I'll tweak their hit points down, and leave their defenses the same or a little bit lower, but maybe up their damage slightly. But some of them, when you start getting up towards the mid to high to heroic, you have to do a little bit more than that. So I had to start, making a chart with all of my PCs, what their 2 hit bonuses or their attack bonuses are and what their defenses are, so that I knew if I was sort of getting to the edge of overpowering the monster. Because if I wanted a monster to stay around a little bit, I would invariably have to mess with its defenses.
Sure.
So... But I think I'm not quite as far into the Essentials game to be able to say the comparison, a true comparison at this point.
Yeah, the funny thing.
Go ahead.
The funny thing for me is I've played in Essentials. I have a second level Slayer that I've been playing that I really, really enjoy. I'm really having a lot of fun with her. But I haven't actually run an Essentials game myself, so I really have no idea exactly how it'll run, but... just kind of looking at it and knowing what my games have been like in the past, I can already see that there's a lot of balance that's in there that I didn't see previously.
Evening, Cato. How's it going?
Good evening. How was it?
Hello.
I hate Essentials. That's all. No.
And Dungeons.
And
yes,
Dungeons.
And Dungeons.
But actually, my DDXP, I love dragons. Stop saying that.
Oh, there's one thing. One thing.
But the idea, the XP adventure will be essentials only.
Yeah. I mean, what the, there's another funny thing, which is I just started my Gamma World campaign, which is going to be a 10-night, 10-level campaign where every night they level no matter what. And it's just wacky good fun. And it reminds – I don't want to say that it reminds me of Essentials, but the character design is so simple. And, you know, the idea that you can sit and generate a character in 10 minutes and just run with it. And the players are having a ball. It's the first time I've really seen them seriously roleplay. And it's like, it's funny that it takes some, you know, pyrokinetic rats are the character that they empathize with, you know, but they really are getting into it, you know.
I wonder if so, it's less serious.
I guess. And that it's already a joke.
Yeah. I think that's completely it.
Yeah. I think there's some of that. I think also the abstraction of mechanics from story makes a huge difference too. The idea that you get to decide what weapon you're going to have, and it just gives you loose statistics for the weapon. That's something that I really wish they had done in D&D, instead of like every single possible edged weapon has its own set of stats.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to play. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I haven't been able to play Gamma World yet. I have it, and I've looked at it, and I've read a lot of it, but I'm really looking forward to playing, because I want to see what it's going to teach me about how I want to tweak my 4E game.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that.
I haven't found a lot of ways that really work back into my 4E game yet, but there's just, you know, there's so many different things you can do in Gamma World, and you can, I mean, any mm-hmm. story you can imagine, you can fit in there somehow, you know, because it's got like everything in it. So it's really nice from a storytelling perspective. It mm-hmm. scales really well. Like I've got a game tomorrow, and I really don't care who shows up. You know, if four people show up, no problem. If seven people show up, no problem. You know, combat's not going to get much longer, and there's not all this crazy, like, let me look at my 3 pages worth of power cards to figure out exactly what I'm going to do. You only have like 4 powers, and they don't seem to mind.
Doesn't it say 2 to 6 players or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably play a one-on-one game with that pretty easily. Yeah, you might die a lot. Better be a lot of minions.
Hey, that's good, right? I mean, that's the whole point.
I guess.
Die often. Hey, early and often.
Has someone thought about running it like they would Paranoia? In other words, you're like, you come out of a clone bath, and like whenever your character dies in Gamma World, a clone is activated?
I actually just thought of that the other night, because I was looking at my Paranoia stuff and thinking about some, I was talking to some friends of mine and looking at it, and I thought of that, but since I haven't run Gamma World, I didn't really think seriously about it.
Well, I would say that part of what makes Gamma World fun is the fact that you're playing new characters all the time. Mike just pointed out that the amount of powers they have is limited. You know, most characters, what you get like a couple powers from each of your origins, right?
Right, right.
And so last time I ran Gamma World, 2 of my players played 2 different characters through the game. And so, you know, in 4 encounters, they got to use different powers. Now, each encounter, they only had a choice of a few different powers, but they got to kind of sample and play different stuff. And
right.
I guess I sit on the other side of the fence that I like options, and so mm-hmm. I see the ability to roll new characters and play something new as one of those things that keeps Gamma World fresh. I mean, we're, you know, if you're trying to figure out what the chemistry is, I would say that's definitely part of it. So
the alpha.
Yeah, the alpha too.
The alpha mutations and the omega tech also. Every battle, you've got something, some new aspect to your character. That's pretty significant. So that's something that doesn't really fit into D&D really easily.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone here played Eclipse Phase, if I could say it right?
Never heard of it.
Nope.
It's got a pretty interesting system. I mean, it's the system is a D100 system, so that. Yeah, that's not what I mean by interesting, but it has a really involved background, history of the world. And one of the things about it is that your brain, which in the game is it's your ego, that's what they call it, but it's basically your brain / soul, and it can be uploaded at a given time and saved. And then if your body dies, your body's called a morph in this system. If your morph dies, you go back to the last point where your ego was backed up. So, and there are a ton of different morphs and different options that you get, and the morphs change the way that certain things act with each other. And it's sort of in between. I'm thinking about it as sort of in between of what you guys are talking about. So in Gamma World, if you die, you know, you can always just roll up another character, and then at the same time you've got these alpha mutations that change, but it's a different character, not the alpha mutation, but rolling up a new character is a different character, so that brings in the variability that's fun for a lot of people. But then in D&D, one of the great things about it is character development and character progression, and I get the sense you don't really get a lot of that in Gamma World because you keep dying, which, you know, they both offer sort of different things. Eclipse Phase is sort of in the middle in that respect because you can die, but then you get to reload into a new body. So you're the same ego, but you might get different powers or slightly different skills or a different way of being. You see what I'm saying? It's sort of in the middle. Very interesting background world.
I think, too, in Gamma World, one of the nice things is you can die spectacularly, often at your own choosing by doing an alpha mutation and the overcharge. So that's something I really like about it.
I'm looking forward to playing it sometime. I don't have it yet.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah. Thaddeus, you have an idea about how to work Gamma World into D&D?
Yeah, I just had a thought about a fun way to work the Gamma World style play into D&D with the Omega Tech and stuff like that. I think maybe what would be fun is, you know, with the original style of powers in 4E, with the encounters and the at-wills and the dailies, you could basically print out all the cards for what you could have. And, I mean, this would get really expensive unless you're doing it digitally. But after each, so you'd select like one at will and one encounter that you would keep and you'd always have. And then after every combat, you'd shuffle through the deck and give yourself a new at will and a new encounter and a new daily. So if you don't use your daily that fight, then it goes back into the pile, you shuffle, and then you redraw. And so it would kind of give you that flavor of the Omega Tech and the alpha mutations. Because you'd have two powers that you can always count on.
Right.
But then something would always be changing. Instead of having those optimized characters that you're like, because I see a lot of players who use basically a chain of powers. They're like, okay, I start with this power, then I use this power, then I use with this power, and then I use this power, and then I just use my at will. And so if it was shuffled, you know, if every fight they had a different encounter and a different at will, then they wouldn't be able to kind of build those chains, and it would be maybe a little more interesting.
Okay, question for you. It sounds like an awesome idea, but I have a counterpoint. How do you do that in a game that often relies on immersion and in-depth character background? How do you reconcile those two? Do you set up a very specific scenario in your campaign where it's free-flowing like that? Or I'm just curious as to what you would use to do that.
Or you just don't care.
Or you could do that too. I mean, that's fine. But
no, yeah, I know that there are certain people on Twitter, because they often hit me over the head with this, that they care more that the mechanics fit into the narrative, where some people don't care as much, because, you know, some people say, hey, it's a game. But it would be hard to fit into the D&D narrative. Although an interesting way to do it might be the spell plague type scenario.
Yeah, some kind of wild magic option, or like a Alice in Wonderland type situation, where everything is just really batshit crazy. Oops, excuse my language. But yeah, so you know those kind of scenarios. But I like the idea. But I think you would have to have a specific scenario to wrap that around. So, but
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe it's just the idea of powers is kind of funny to me, in just the sense that a person would hone their skills to only be able to do a couple things, and I actually get playing more into the scenario of my campaign if the characters had a broader it'd make them feel more heroic if they had a broader palette of powers to use, but they just focused on using certain powers through each fight. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
So those powers are always known to them, but they really only have, you know, the ability to use them so often, and so, you know, in each fight, they drop from the cards, and that's the ones they're going to focus on. And so basically, you would paint it as, you know, part of the motivation is this is what your character's focused on. In fights, you know, there's a lot going on, and so you know, your character is really focused on what he's doing, and he decides these are the powers that I'm going to focus on right now, and I'm not going to think about all the different tricks that I know. Whether it's like a wizard thinking about all the different spells he can cast, or like a monk thinking about all the different moves that he could do.
So wait, you're saying everything available for that level?
Right. It's in the deck, and then you shuffle, and then at the beginning of every encounter, you draw.
I think it really breaks the thought of a character that they would know everything that's available to them at a level.
Why would that break then?
Well, I think from build options, I think it would. You've got certain powers, particularly at dailies and encounters, that are based on a specific build.
Right,
and
but then you also don't get characters who are fully optimized. You don't have to
admitted.
Worry. I mean, Mike was talking about how in Essentials he doesn't have to go through and tweak his monsters all that much. If every power that you got at the beginning of every encounter, you know, didn't play off of your highest stat, then suddenly the monsters may stand a little bit more of a fighting chance because you're not hitting every roll and you're not doing the maximum amount of damage every time.
But I think that really breaks like Randall was saying, the character development. Usually you just, that's impossible to know everything, like every stance and every way you can swing, every weapon, every way you can swing your sword or your axe and everything. Like, that kind of does, I mean, you just have to have a special kind of game for that to be okay. And a wizard shouldn't know every spell. Like, that's just not possible.
See, I don't understand where that's, I mean, that kind of thinking, the kind of thinking that says it's impossible for this to happen. When you're the person who says that it doesn't matter that, you know, in some games women are as strong as men, or they're, you know, not subservient and that kind of stuff. Like, it's that kind of thinking that the people who you always get it mixed up kind of.
Well, yeah, and I'm just saying from the point of view of most people who are actually playing the game. As much as I love the idea of expanding outward, our thinking. If you want to play a wizard that has studied in his tower for, you know, most of his life, these particular spells and mastered them, to say, well, you can't play that character because I'm going to be doing this other thing, kind of sucks too.
Well, I don't see how it's any different than saying you can only play essentials than saying you have to play a person who plays with random powers. Like, we're talking about limiting options. I'm talking about expanding options, but making it limited per encounter.
No, you're also talking about limiting the stories that can be told, which is fine, but it's the additional.
How is that limiting the stories that can be told?
Because, like you just said, like I just said, that some people want to play a character that is the master of this particular small set of skills. Like, and if you say that you can't do that, that you have to pick every at the beginning of every encounter, your powers from this wide range, then they can't.
Thad, as a player in that kind of campaign, I would have to sit down and ask myself, what is going on in the world that allows me to do this? And I would need to come up with...
Let me break it down for you like this. I took martial arts for about 8 years.
Okay.
Okay. When we studied martial arts, I didn't just learn one type of throw or one type of roll or one type of kick. I didn't practice that every day until I could just do this one kick really well, or one leg sweep, or one roll, or one throw. I learned in my first year, I learned about 8 or 9 throws, and I learned different ways to take people down, and I learned different blocks, and I learned different punches, and I learned different kicks. Now, does that mean every fight I got into, I used, and I, you know, I didn't really get in a lot of fights, and when I did, I actually wrestled, but it didn't mean that, and as a wrestler, I learned different holds, and I learned different takedowns, but it didn't mean that in every match I got into, I used those same takedowns, or I used the exact same holds. I mixed it up a little bit, and some I was way better at than others, but that doesn't mean every match was the right match to use that, you know, it was just spur of the moment.
Right, but how many different martial arts did you study? Like, how many...
Two, and wrestling.
Right, and so in some ways your powers are kind of an abstraction of the different... Like, when you slide a target as one square, you're not necessarily doing it the same exact way each time you do it. You could be doing different moves. it's just an abstraction because I really don't care what exact move I use to move them to one square.
I think that's just one way of looking at it. You could also say that a class, the idea of a class is an abstraction, and so that instead of just having that one power, you know, one class is studying all of that stuff. So I don't know. I think it's as bad as you guys think it is. I think it would be a good idea.
I think it's terrible.
I have to say you also don't like dungeons or essentials, so I mean it seems like
but I love dragons.
Physically.
Burn.
I guess.
I have to say, as the producer, I'm going to edit out all of that whole spiel that Thaddeus just said, and here's how the podcast is going to go. He's going to say, no, listen, I studied martial arts for 8 years, and then it's going to cut to him saying, and if you don't agree with me, I'm going to kick all your asses.
Do I need to say that right now? If you don't agree with me, I'm going to come around to each of your houses and kick all of your asses.
You'll have to get past my...
Bring it.
I have a big dog.
Is that a euphemism?
No. I actually do have a big dog. He's always sleeping somewhere.
Hey, I have a vicious attack dachshund, so, you know.
Nice.
The most dangerous dog in America.
They are.
Yeah.
They don't kill anybody, though.
They're badger hunters.
That's right.
We had a dachshund when I was younger, and he bit the refrigerator repairman, and his teeth went right through the guy's thick leather boots.
Nice.
Wow.
Well, we told him not to go in the kitchen until we put the dogs out. And, of course, what did he do? Stepped over the gate that was blocking the kitchen from the living room. Yeah.
Hey, there's a reason they used dachshunds for the movie Deadly Eyes, which was about giant killer rats. I kid you not.
Awesome. I've never heard of that movie, but I'll take your word for it.
Take a look it up, Deadly Eyes. And when you see them run along the wall of the sewer, you'll see little round dachshund feet. I kid you not. They dressed up dachshunds as giant rats. So, a little bit of movie trivia there. Enjoy. Nice.
Now I got some more movie trivia for you. You know when you see in the movies, you see this nice, beautiful hawk, and he's flying over the canyon, and he goes, and he makes that really awesome, I'm a really cool hawk, or I'm a really cool eagle sound. That's actually not what eagles sound like. Eagles make a really high-pitched sort of chirp, chirp sort of noise. And so they use the red-tail hawk noise for eagles mostly in movies. So there you go. There's your movie trivia from the producer.
Okay, so I got a trivia for you. The idea of shuffling power cards at the beginning of every combat.
Man. Actually, though, I think Kato wanted to jump in and say something about Gamma World, so maybe we'll turn back to that.
Yeah, Mike, I wanted to ask about your Gamma World game, because I'm intrigued. Are you running a, this is the hometown that the players are familiar with, but it's 150 years in the future? Is that the kind of setting you're going for? Or are you going for something different, like the famine in Fargo? It's some other part of the country.
Well,
let me tell you about my game. Wait. Before you answer, you guys sound so much alike on here that it sounds like Mike is asking himself a question. Yeah.
We are actually the same person.
Yeah, I thought so. So anyway, go ahead.
I'll make it short because I think hearing about other people's games is usually pretty boring. I live in the Washington D.C. area, which is both great because there's so many familiar things around here, but also it's kind of lame because Fallout 3 already was set in Washington D.C. and so, you know, there's a whole other post-apocalyptic game that's already set in D.C. and anybody that's played it is kind of DC. But you can pick areas. So there's a big highway interchange that's not far from me. The Springfield interchange where 95 and 495 and 395 all kind of converge. And I thought it'd be kind of cool if that interchange actually had a giant sinkhole in the center of it. So there's all these roads that are coming together. And then there's a big hole where all of the roads should meet so that it's kind of all of the ends of all of these roads. And then this giant sinkhole with this weird kind of gas that's coming out of it. And the gas is creating stuff. So that was the setting that I picked. That was the starting town was a town called Rebar. And Rebar is this, you know, kind of the end of all of these roads joined together. And they're like four or five levels high. And the top level they use for agriculture. And then, you know, other areas they use for, like, you know, inns, you know, not an inn, but like little hotel spaces that are all from broken down cars. So I did use a setting that was familiar.
Hello?
Did we just lose Mike? Hello? Hello? Sorry, I had to restart my whole computer. It wouldn't even restart Skype for me. It was being a biatch.
Yeah, Sam, that was my bad. I knew that call would eventually drop. I apologize. So.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, it's fine. As long as you guys didn't talk about the meaning of life and discover what it was while I was offline.
Totally did.
Yeah, everything got solved.
Yeah, darn.
And we made some insane breakthroughs in neurobiology. But,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Using all my data. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you just got to figure it all out yourself.
Damn. I'll just wait for you guys to publish the papers and I'll read them.
Publish.
Yeah, this is all just for us. We're not publishing this anywhere.
It'll be on my blog tomorrow. That's peer reviewed, right?
Yeah. Wait, I told you guys. Yeah, I told you guys I work for WikiLeaks, right?
I don't even.
Yeah, right.
I don't even want to start talking about WikiLeaks right now. This is not the forum for that.
No, I just had to make a funny. I was just making a funny.
Well, nice try. Nice try.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. See.
So that was a good way to just destroy conversation right there. What we were talking about. I think Mike was talking to himself. Is that what was happening?
I was talking about my game. I was telling myself about my own game.
Not to talk about your game or anything like that. I think that was.
That's why.
That was the number one requoted line in the last DM's roundtable was Mike saying, not to talk about my game.
That should be your full name now, Mike, not to talk about my name, Shay. A game, Shay. No. Forget
Apparently you already did.
But I can't, I've got a problem, I'll know it. But yeah.
So, let's actually let Mike finish his thought about Gamma World, about the world he was doing.
It was boring anyway. I built it over a bunch of highways that were all stacked on top of one another, and then the center of it was blown through, so it was a giant sinkhole right underneath, and some strange gas was coming out of the sinkhole that made it really nice to grow these strange blue crops that could be used for just about anything. They were one of the few edible areas, and it also kept the whole area warm. So in the middle of winter, that was nice. People all kind of propagated there, and they knew that whatever was going on there was not good, but they went around there anyway. And the whole place is called Rebar. So nice. It's run by a fella named Father Ash. So
Rebar.
So I don't know if you guys saw my tweet about the really cool Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles map that I got for my Gamma World game. So I found another really awesome find at the thrift store. Actually, my girlfriend Carol found it. She always does. It's this game called Mall Madness, which is this game from the late 80s, early 90s, or mid 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like that. I remember
and it's got
that.
These, yeah, it's got these buildings, and then it's got this fountain in the center with some little fake escalator. Well, it turns out it's the perfect size for 28mm minis. And you can actually, the version, there's a beige version and a purple version, and we found the purple version for like $1.99. Anyway, so it has this. So I'm going to use that in conjunction with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles map. So I can't wait to play this so that I can take a bunch of pictures and make everybody jealous about the really awesome Gamma World game that I'm running. Which now that I've talked it up really a lot, it's probably going to flop. But you heard it first here.
Yeah, I've been actually running the adventure right out of the back of the book for the actual adventure.
Really?
Just because it was easy, and they left it pretty open, so you can fit it in pretty well. But I think once they get out of that dungeon, then I'm gonna give them a lot of different options about places they can go and directions they can lead, and hopefully by then I'll have Famine and Fargo, and hopefully I'll be able to fit that in somewhere because I think that might be fun too.
So let me ask you then, Mike, because I want to start up a Gamma World game and I want to use the sort of local setting idea. And I'm a relatively inexperienced DM. So when it comes to creating, like, you would think, okay, so I have this we have this existing world. We, you know, I know everything around me, and I just have to set it 150 years in the future. But then I come and have sort of this paralysis with, well, there's so many options. Like, I know so many possible things I could do, and I'm having a hard time, like, narrowing down, like, what are good ideas, and how do I, you know, like, in a fantasy setting, there's established tropes, but, you know, if I'm just playing in a generic Points of Light thing, I just create a city and plop it in the middle there, and I don't have to worry about everything else around it. So, am I making sense? Like,
yeah. Well, the three Fs, the, you know, needs to be familiar, functional, and fantastic. And, you know, so familiar was the, you know, the interchange, the big highway interchange. Functional meant it was a town that had all the kind of functions they would need. And also they recognized how it worked as a big road. And then fantastic was the idea that there's this huge sinkhole right in the center of it. And, you know, so finding, you know, starting with your base of operations and making it something that's unique and interesting. Yeah. You know, I look at like Hammerfast, the Hammerfast book that came out, and it's an entire town that's filled with ghosts. And then the ghosts and the humans all work together. You know, I thought that was kind of a neat, fantastic, yet useful arrangement. So you want something that really sets it apart from any other place that they would go, but you can still find something that's local. You know, it's a shopping mall or, you know, a parking garage or whatever.
So what are those? What are those three Fs again?
So that's not mine. It came from I heard it from the Wizards of the Coast podcast a few ago, and I can't remember who was on the podcast that. His name Randy? There's a guy that was on the podcast, and he's a WotC designer, and he said that there were three Fs where, you know, everything, whether it's a city or a dungeon or anything, needs to be familiar, something that people will recognize and understand. Functional, it has to actually work and make sense in the world that you've put it in. And fantastic, it has to be something beyond the imagination of the players. And it's usually easy to get like two of the three, but it's kind of hard to get all three. But when you get all three, what you get is something that's really something people will remember. So that's, you know, what makes that one town different? Well, maybe it's floating on an earth mode. You know, okay, well, that makes sense. But then how does it actually work? Well, they have elevators or something. So once you have that base of operations and you start there, what I did was the Dave, I subscribe heavily to the Dave Chalker 5x5 method for building kind of a world that players can explore that is not unlimited, so that they get paralyzed by too many options, but it's also open enough that they really feel like it's a living world. It's not just, you know, a bunch of tracked quests that they're doing. And Dave's method for that is to start off by coming up with five major themes, you know, five major story seeds. Like, you know, there, and I, you know, I don't know if I can come up with a whole bunch on top of my head. And actually, I had a lot of trouble with this for Gamma World. So what I did instead with Gamma World was instead of coming up with five major themes, I came up with five major antagonists, and started with, you know, five villains. And they didn't have to be real villains. Sometimes they could be, you know, just people who were going to have a big effect on the world. And you kind of start with those five villains, and then for each of them, you build a series of plots or a series of storylines that might tie to each of those. And then you find a way to tie those to the player characters so that they have an option to actually investigate these. You know, in Gam World, you might have, okay, well, there's a highly armed military unit that's out there that's trying to find all the Omega Tech that they have. And there's the leader of the Hoops, who is this crazy, you know, this crazy rabbit who, you know, is trying, he has his own stories. And then you have, you know, a cyborg who's fighting for robot rights, you know, that he thinks that robots are not treated as fairly as everything else, and he wants to do it. You know, a telepath who is just wickedly powerful and wants nothing but to be alone, so he's slowly destroying everybody that he ever sees. And, you know, I don't know, so you come up with five like that, and then for each of those you come up with a story. And that actually, that's something I just did this last weekend for my own Gamma World campaign, and that helped a lot. I think I came up with a lot of really interesting story ideas and ways to have plots. And the other thing with Gamma World is they don't have to be big, because, you know, you're not going to have a very long campaign in it. So you don't have to build something out that's nearly as extensive as what you would build with a 4E campaign. And I'll shut up now.
No, those are all great. I mean, those are fantastic ideas.
Yeah. Are you planning on running a, sorry, Randall, I totally cut
no,
you
go
off.
Ahead.
That's my bad.
That's all right. No, I'm just, I was, yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to ask if you're planning on running like a 1-10 campaign, or you're just going to run like however many sessions it takes to get through those five main story plot points.
Well, so that's the key with the 5x5 method is they may never go through three of those five. You know, you might just put the options out there and they say, mm-hmm. Well, I'm really curious about this cyborg who's fighting for robot rights. So let's go down that path. And I'm really interested in that military unit that we ran into, and they're kind of hardcore, so let's investigate them more. But I don't give a damn about crazy rabbits, and I don't really know what's going on with that telepath guy. So they never actually have to chase those threads, and that's okay. You know, they're right there, and you can just kind of forget about them. So the 5x5 method evolves over time. You get halfway through it, and then you stop and do a new 5x5. Or you might even do a 3x3. It doesn't have to be five every time. And, but yeah, as far as running a 1-10, I think my plan is to run Gamma World until I'm tired of it or until my players are tired of it. And, but if I'm leveling once every night, once every evening that we get together, then I think we could get through a 10 level, you know, we could get through 10 levels pretty quickly.
Right.
So that certainly
would be. Well, yeah, and wouldn't that be in 10 nights?
Yeah, it'd be in 10 nights. Exactly. So.
I'm sorry. I didn't know if maybe I was doing the math wrong or something. I had to
check. But they might decide they get bored before then, and then we're going to switch over to Gamma, or we're going to switch over to Dark Sun. And Dark Sun's going to be my next campaign.
Meh.
I like Dark Sun.
Meh. You going to do an Essentials-only Dark Sun game?
No, but it's going to be limited. Yeah, you know, we go back to limiting things. I don't know how it's going to be limited yet.
Dark Sun in it itself was already pretty
limited. It is already limited. But yeah, I think one thing I'm definitely going to do is there's no PHP 1. So you can do... Yeah, you can use Essentials, so you still have a lot of the PHP 1 classes. But no, it'll be PHP 2, PHP 3, and anything from the Dark Sun world and Essentials, but no PHP 1. I think I might try that out. We'll see.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
PHP 1's so out of date anyway. The book's not helpful. Let me ask you this, because we talked about... you mentioned the 5x5 method, and you sort of prescribed to this idea of coming up with a couple of plot seeds or something that your players and their characters can investigate. And one of the things I have a hard time with, I've done a little bit of adventure design, but like my D&D campaign, we're still running Keep on the Shadowfell, and so most of the story is laid out for me. Right. And after that, I'm hoping to expand onto sort of homebrew stuff. But when you're coming up with these things, like let's say you use the 5x5 and you come up with these different ideas, and how do you manage what you're going to prep for the next session depending on which way your players are going to go? Right. You know, like,
it's a very good question.
Do you go one step at a time and just limit it to that? Do you take a guess as to where they might go? You know, because I'm still sort of uncomfortable with winging it at the table, you know?
Right. You have them decide at the end of a session instead of at the beginning.
Okay.
That's the only way I found that it really works. I've tried doing it in email between sessions, but the problem is like you only get a couple of people that actually email you back, and then people show up and they're like, oh, I didn't want to do that. So that doesn't really work. And you can't do it at the beginning unless you build everything. Because one of the keys to this is you have to love all five of those threads. You can't say like, well, I wrote five, but I'm really interested in these two, because the players will find out and they'll end up feeling like they're back on the rails, getting steered down the direction of two instead of five. So you have to really think like, of all of those five, I'd be happy going in any of the directions. And you can't do that if you've already prepped for two of them. So all of the seeds for those don't have to come out at the same time. They might come out, you know, across a few different things. But I think that, yeah, the way that you actually say, like, okay, where are things going to go? And I've done this before, even when I wasn't doing a 5x5 method, and it's just a couple of paths that they could take. And you say, okay, well, you have a choice. You can go to that city over there that's, you know, heavily populated with the cultists of Orcus, or you can go to that city over there that looks like it's almost completely desolate, except that there's some kind of weird ghostly cloud that's hanging over it. Or you can take the River Styx, you know, and you offer that at the end of an adventure, and they say, I guess we're going to go River Styx. And then that's what you plan for at the next game. That's the only way I've seen. I'm sure there are other ways, but that's the only way I found that worked really well for me.
Well, I can tell you the way that I did it, or how I approached it. And that's what, it wasn't my own homebrew stuff, but what I took was all the, it's the DDI online, all the modules that they've been running in Dungeon. The ones with the shard, or the crystals or whatever. My mind's gone completely blank. Help me out, guys.
Chaoscar?
Yes, Chaoscar stuff. I took all those modules.
That's good.
And I looked through all the first, starting out the group, and I looked at all the first level stuff, and some of the second level stuff, and I went through and I pulled all the hooks from them. And then what I did was I wrote a newsletter. And it was with all these articles. And so it was like the players could actually sit at the bar or sit at the inn or whatever and be reading the paper and see what's going on in this area. And I did it in such a way that it wasn't too anachronistic. I think that a Pony Express type situation is not totally unheard of in that kind of thing. And, you know, small towns might have a limited, you know, the main keep might produce, you know, a limited press run of a leaflet or a flyer that people would see. And it's interesting news items. And then there's even things out on one side of things people are selling or trading. And so those are also incorporated into the adventure hooks because there are rewards that are monetary in things on some of these different adventures. And so they may be interested in saying, oh, wow, this guy has this staff. What's that all about? And so they go and can explore that adventure. And so that's how I did it. It's a little more formalized. You could certainly do that with your own homebrew stuff as well. You just find out what all your little adventures are going to be, pull the hooks out of them,
right,
create a newsletter. There you
actually
go.
Actually, that idea of having a physical representation of a quest or a story line is really powerful, whether it's a quest card that you generate or whether it's a physical object that represents the quest.
Yep.
You know, I think that can be a really powerful way to kind of structure a game, still give people options, but make sure that they feel like they have a direction that they're going. And now they've got this thing in their hand that tells them. That's really a good idea.
Well, one of the things I do is, I do two things to sort of, I don't know how to say this, take the temperature of the group at the beginning of each session at the end. At the beginning of each session, one of the things that I do is a recap, but I don't do the recap myself. I make the players do the recap. Mm-hmm. And what that tells me is what they paid attention to and what they are interested in. Because generally speaking, if I throw out five clues, and when I do the recap, when I make them do the recap the following week, they only picked up on two of those. And one of them they sounded really interested in, and one of them they started a discussion at the table about something. I know that those things are relatively interesting to them, so I can sort of make sure I plan for that if they choose to go that way. And after sessions, I send out a little paragraph that says the basics of what happened. And I also, with that, send a little tidbit of, here is something that you noticed right at the end of the last session. And it sort of gives them a little cliffhanger of, oh, we're going to expect to learn more about that or resolve a little bit of that at the beginning of the next session. And what that usually includes is the different things like this guy that you spoke to told you about this, remember, but that hasn't been resolved yet. So about once a month, I'll do a major recap that says, here are the unresolved issues that you guys know about. And that just reminds them. I don't tell them you need to pick two of these to choose or you need to investigate these to move further in the story. I just throw it out there. And it sort of has benefits and disadvantages. One of the advantages are, you know, if the players read it, it tells, you know, they get to, when they do the recaps, they throw those things in, and that tells me which ones they're interested in. The bad thing about it is if the player doesn't write it or doesn't read it, then, you know, I can't tell where they're at. And I have no way of knowing truly if they've read it. So, you know, it's a little hard to do things like that over email. But I also hit them up face-to-face too. So there's different ways to find out how your game is playing out and whether the players are liking it or not.
So when you're doing something like this with kind of an open style world, a really good idea, if you're doing like a 5x5 kind of a thing, is to make sure that the things that the players don't pick up on, the directions that the players don't decide to go, make sure that you kind of fade those into the background. They can still kind of be flavor mm-hmm. for the story, but I've played in games where the DM has not really, and maybe it just comes from what Mike said about really having to love all five of them. Maybe he liked the storyline better than the storyline that the players chose to follow, but make sure that you fade enough of them into the background that you don't spend 7 or 8 levels chasing 5 different quests and never completing any of them. Because I've played in games before where halfway through one quest we'd meet somebody and they would send us on another quest, and then we'd get halfway through that and we'd meet somebody and they'd send us on another
right.
quest.
Right.
And so
right,
it really yeah. felt like the DM set up five different ideas for us, and they couldn't decide which one he wanted to take to completion or which one we should follow. And right. so we thought we were choosing, and then the one we chose ended halfway through the middle. And so we're like, okay, I guess we'll go with this other quest, and then it would end halfway through the middle. So,
right.
you
yeah.
know, those.
Mm-hmm. So the way that I have to sort of train myself to not do that, because that's sort of a typical, you know, as the GM, you're in control of everything, and we all probably, everybody that GMs for any length of time has a tendency to be in control of all of this information, and so you know so much about it, it's really sometimes hard to not push them in a direction or to, you know, favor a particular topic or favor a quest. But you just have to train yourself to let that go. You know, I have used the 5x5 method in the past, and the thing is that you can't, like Mike said, you can't marry any of those ideas. You have to throw them out there, and some of them are going to get picked up and some of them aren't. And you have to really accept that that's going to happen, because it's not as though those ones that don't get pursued right now disappear out of the world. I mean, they disappear out of that particular campaign, but they're still in your toolbox of things you can use as a GM. You may use it in a different game. You may use it in a different campaign. You may revisit it later. Maybe you up the level of it, you know, and tweak it slightly so that it looks different enough that the players don't recognize it's the same basic thing. But, you know, you just can't get married to your ideas, because some of them just aren't going to be what the players want. So if you just start out with the idea that some things are going to get picked up and some aren't, and I have to be okay with that, you're a little bit better off.
Right. Hey, guys, I need to step out, but I appreciate having me on again. It's always a pleasure.
All right, Mike. Yeah, thanks
Absolutely,
for coming on.
Mike. Thank you very much.
Yep. Talk to you guys later.
All right.
Take care.
You've been listening to The Mike Shea Show. Bye, Mike.
We'll be playing Mike for the remainder of the podcast.
See you guys.
See you
Have
later.
A good one, Mike.
So
anyway. As you can see, if anyone just knows, I just linked the newsletter idea that I use. So if anyone's interested in looking at that.
Yeah, I'll download it later. I don't want to do it while I'm recording because I'm afraid it'll drop us.
No, that's cool. No, that's yeah. fine. Just
don't want that to happen again.
You just might save it for. We could put that in the show notes even if you'd like. So that's not a problem.
Oh, okay, cool. Sure, I'll throw it up on the server and we'll host it from there. That way we don't drag your Dropbox limit down.
Sam, don't take this the wrong way, but that's one of the reasons I really love it when you're on the show.
What's that?
We actually end up having show notes.
Hey, no, somebody wrote show notes for one of the shows that I wasn't on, and
yeah,
it was,
that
was funny. Yeah,
that was who was that? Dread Gazebo. It was Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry. Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't have anybody last week who was willing to write them for me. So I just linked to Google. I was like, if you want to know anything more about anything on the show, click here, and I just take you to Google.
Awesome.
Just type the damn thing in yourself.
I like it. So Tracy, how about you? How do you manage the multiple quests, or do you railroad all your players?
Quests?
Well,
what are these things? I don't know what you're talking about.
Quests are like dungeons.
Stories, adventure. Adventure lines. How am I going to put it? Sorry.
Well, because it is relatively new, I guess. Wasn't really railroading. They could decide to do whatever they wanted. I didn't give them a lot of different quests, and I definitely didn't give them any that conflicted with each other. But I think when I start my next campaign, they're going to have multiple quests. They can decide which ones to take, but if they decide not to take certain ones, that doesn't mean that nothing happens. Like, there are other things happening in the background, and I think the choices they make should always have consequences, whether or not they decide to go with or against something. So that's what I get a little worried about.
Yeah, that's a good one. Choices always should have consequences. The choice to do something and the choice to not do something about something.
Right. Exactly.
Right. The world still is surviving when the PCs are off doing other stuff.
Yeah, off camera. It still exists off camera. And so actually on the Tome show the other night, Mike and I were on with Jeff, and we were talking – they were designing a dungeon for me, and we took one of the ideas that we didn't explore in the current campaign, and we're going to bring it up to pretty much low Paragon level, and it'll be the basis of a dungeon for the game when we start back up again.
Hmm. A dungeon, huh?
Hmm. Yeah, they think I might like it, so I'm willing to give it a try. We'll see how it goes. I'll experiment a little. I'm still young.
Well, I guess once Jeff Greiner brought out the pear-like device, it was all over, right?
Yeah. That's what happened.
Is that what happened? Okay. Okay, just so that we're completely clear.
Basically, they're like, Tracy, you're going to like dungeons, and that's just the end of it. And I was like, sure, whatever. And they said, hey, we won! So they think they won. I told them they won this battle, but I'll win the war.
Hey, you know, letting them think they've won is actually a viable strategy. So
hey, this is what I'm saying. You know, they can think whatever they want. I'm still the DM of my own game.
Except, Randall, did you hear that? She totally did a dig against us a few minutes ago. She said she was still young. She's got time. I think that was a point pointing out how old you and I are.
Well, yeah, I was,
and to think we let her on our lawn.
I was young until yesterday. So
yeah, you're suddenly old. I know.
Yeah,
you're like 30 now, aren't you?
No, I'm 31 now.
Yeah, he's 31.
Oh, you're 31. Oh, so you're now officially 30 something. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's the youngin.
Yeah. So, oh, well, Tracy, you're over 30. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm almost a year older than Thaddeus.
Yeah. these kids. Kids these days.
I know.
Kids these days. You Bunch let me babies. On the lawn? You paid me to dance on your lawn. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. After I saw that picture that Jeff Greiner posted up on Hono to Grow a BMO, I had to invite you to the lawn, you know? Don't tell Fred.
Oh my god, I almost started my soda all over my I was like, this is a good time to take a sip, oh no.
And fail, yeah. Someone introduced
me. Yeah. Kato is strangely quiet right now.
He's working on his role
this
as...
This isn't Kato, this is Mike.
Oh, Jay. Sorry. Yeah.
Mike Shay of Sly Flourish. Have you bought my book?
Yeah. SlyFlourish.com/books.
Nice.
That's right. It covers DMing tips. It covers game advice. It's lovely illustrations.
You're missing one line, though. You got to say not to talk about my game.
Not to talk about my game or anything.
Yeah, there you go.
Or not to talk about my book or anything.
Oh, the poor guy. We're completely just
threw him under the bus. Threw him under the bus.
He likes it.
Yeah. No, actually, it's a great book, though. So everyone who listens to this should buy the PDF. Yeah. SlyFlourish.com/book.
Yep.
I believe that's it. Yes.
That is it.
It's Kato, not in a paid endorsement.
I'd be afraid of you guys. What would happen if you guys ever found somebody who actually sounded anything like me?
We don't need anybody to sound like you.
I just say completely retarded stuff anyway.
I wouldn't call it retarded, but that's a bad word to use anyway. Don't use that word.
Yeah, that's really derogatory towards the disabled people, man. You're such a jerk.
Oh, my God. The disabled people, they're all the same to you, aren't they?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
Yeah,
I am not in this conversation. just edit me out of this one. There you go.
Yeah, I'm going to just replace this all once again with Thaddeus saying, I took karate for 8 years. I'm coming to your houses.
And listen, we didn't do the same moves every time, man. We kept things up.
We didn't. That's the... Tracy's just mad because logic's on my side.
The secret's out. Thaddeus was once a member of the Cobra Kai.
Oh, you know it, dude. Sweep the leg. Sweep the leg.
Oh, man. Just remember, they were defeated with the crane, okay?
That's yeah, true. And what happened when he tried to use that same move in the second movie? He got his ass kicked.
I don't know, dude. I don't watch sequels, so, you know.
So you were really disappointed after the first Star Wars then, weren't you?
There's chapters.
Yeah, those are chapters, man.
Oh, okay.
So, virtual table? Anything else?
Oh, we could talk about virtual table.
Talk about virtual table.
First of all, many thanks to Thad, who was able to wrangle a virtual table for me.
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah,
I'm still a little embarrassed about that whole situation.
Yeah. Well, you know, but still, doesn't matter. It was an accident. I mean, you know, or not intentional anyway. And they were cool about it, so it's all good.
I feel like they didn't want me to feel bad, and so they hooked us up. But I was pretty retarded.
Well, no, I mean that doesn't look bad on you. That looks good on them. We don't have to find fault in a situation. They did what they thought was right in that situation, and you had made an easy mistake to make because I almost made the same mistake like 3 days later.
Yeah.
So.
In the corporate world, we call this a win-win.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, but so, okay, but anyway, so yeah, got you.
Yeah,
the
let's
invite.
Talk about
that
it.
That was cool.
Edit that part out, Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about me kicking ass again.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Anywhere where there's a bad word or something, I'm going to just insert Thaddeus saying, I took martial arts for 8 years. that's the name of this episode.
You should really do that because that would be so funny.
Just edit that in every once in a while. Awesome. Okay, I'll do it. Yeah, he asked me to change the password for him, and I changed it to I Hate Thaddeus.
Yeah. Which quickly reminded me of Trevor Kidd's character in the game we played on the virtual table.
That's right. It was I Hate Thaddeus, wasn't it?
No, it was Thaddeus is a Jerk.
Oh, Thaddeus is a Jerk. That's right.
I have to send a thank you note to Trevor then.
Wow. Did he do that at your bequest?
Who knows? You know, these things happen.
Who knows?
Where's all this love coming from? That's what I don't understand. Like, do people just tell me that because they think I can take it? Or
well, no. You see, you riled me up, and you're like, we have to get blah 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 Tracy out today, and I was like, so now I'm here, and you're just gonna have to deal.
Now, see, I didn't even say that today.
I know you didn't.
Today, I'm just trying to be drunk and quiet, trying to chill by myself.
We switched roles.
Yeah. Well,
sure those are mutually exclusive terms for you, Thad. Drunk and quiet.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're not.
Yeah, okay, good.
I'm Irish, so drunk just happens. I mean, you kind of wake up that way.
But quiet, really?
That sounds like a great shirt. I'm Irish, so drunk just happens.
And we've just lost all of our Irish listeners.
I'm
Irish as well.
They were drunk already. They won't remember.
Yeah, Thad, go ahead and put up the hate mail email address there.
It's Randall Walker at
slyflourish.com/book.
Yeah, slyflourish@slyflourish.com. That's where all our hate mail goes.
Okay.
Cato?
Cato, I love the ritual table.
So, Cato, you have got to go to PAX. And,
I have to go to PAX?
Yeah, you have to go to PAX, and then just start telling everybody you're Sly Flourish.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Just be like, will you let me into this? Because I have a blog.
Oh. I have a blog.
I have a blog and a book. I don't know if you read my book.
I'll just carry the PDF around.
That would work so well. Like, if you and I met in real life right now, and you were like, hey, I'm Sly Flourish, I'd be like, oh, dude.
You wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know. I didn't have a clue. You could get so many D&D ladies if you go to cons and just pretend to be Mike Shea.
I think my fiance would have something to say about that, but...
Yeah.
Hey, Kido, are you going to are you going to PAX East?
I don't think so.
No.
We haven't decided yet, but it's not looking like it right at the moment. But we might be going to Gen Con, so.
Okay.
Yes, I'll be at Gen Con.
We're hitting something next year.
Sweet. Hey, Tracy, when is PAX East?
March. Hmm. I'm pretty sure it's March.
Tracy, do you remember when the pre-sales sold out last year? Was it like January or?
I think it was pretty early. I know I have to buy mine too soon. Because I need to be there. And I think the real Mike Shea will be at PAX East.
Oh, then I can't go because we can't be in the same place at the same time.
No, it'll be a problem. Paradox.
Is Wizards running another DMing contest like they did last year? Or?
Yeah, they're pretty much going to run one of those at every con now.
At every con.
They're pretty popular, cool. Yeah.
So. Yeah, they didn't do it at New York Comic Con, but I think they'll do it at PAX East.
I don't think Comic Con is really kind of a gathering point for DMs, like most cons are. Is there?
There were a bunch of us there.
Yeah, there's a pretty big contingent of role players that are also comic book fans.
No, so. You're wrong. You're wrong. It's not.
Yeah, I know. I'm always wrong. You know why I'm wrong tonight? I'm wrong tonight. I'm wrong tonight because Thaddeus took 8 years of martial arts.
And kicked your ass?
Why did that?
And kicked my ass, yeah.
So why? Can you explain to me why that became such a focal point? I'd love to know for future reference.
Well, no, because you know, we always joke around and say, no, you're wrong, or no, I'm always right, or whatever. And so it just sounded like that's what you were going to do. I thought you were going to say, I thought you were going to be joking around and saying, I took 8 years of martial arts, and you're all wrong, and if you don't admit it, I'm going to kick your ass. And then you actually were truthful, and you said a whole bunch of really cool stuff about taking martial arts, and I was like, oh, he didn't say that. And then I was kind of disappointed.
Oh.
So, you know, I know. You disappoint me, Thaddeus. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. If I ever disappoint you again, I will come to your house and kick your ass.
Awesome. With martial arts.
Right. Or wrestling, one or the other. I'm pretty good at either of them. So.
Cool.
So you won't mind the 45 that I have then? So, you know, really. Because gunpowder was a good thing. So,
gunpowder's for old men.
Hey, it works.
Oh, ouch. Oh.
Hey, I'll take it. I'm not. If that's what it takes to be a man, just call me Miss.
Oh. All right.
So
we have really broken down here at the DM Roundtable.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Do we want to hit up one more major topic for 10 minutes or so, and then stop?
Sounds fine with me.
Yeah. That way we'll go out on a topic and not on everybody's threatening each other.
We'll,
yeah.
We'll actually hit a topic tonight.
Yeah, well, we've hit a couple.
We did.
Yeah.
We did. We've talked about, let's recap. We've talked about Gamma World.
Time travel.
Did we talk about time travel?
You did.
But you weren't
did.
On that.
God, yeah, I was we about did. To say, I must have been really drunk for that part.
Did anyone see that there's a time traveler? Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, did anyone see that there's a time traveler origin for Gamma World in Famine and Fargo? It was one of the preview articles on Wizards this week.
Oh. No, oh, I haven't looked at that yet.
Yeah, I was like, that.
Okay.
That would have been a great segue, Kato, if you'd mentioned it at the time, but no.
Yeah. He wasn't on, though.
That's true. He wasn't. Yeah, but yeah.
He should have traveled in time.
I know.
Yeah. He left. And so is Randall. No, is Randall still there? Randall's gone.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I don't get this new D&D. This new, I'm drunk. I don't know what I'm doing.
Dude.
I have no idea what I'm doing. Listen, I'm going to be honest right now. If you guys could see me, I've got like 2 empty beers and I've been drinking screwdrivers. Because all I have is vodka right now and orange juice.
Oh.
And so I've had 2 beers and 2 screwdrivers, and I'm just laying on the couch with a mic, like, hanging over my face.
Thaddeus.
Yeah.
When you run out of beer, never go to the screwdrivers. This is hard-won wisdom for me. Just don't do it.
Thaddeus, it's beer before liquor, never been sicker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm a bartender. I know these things.
Yeah, I know. But you're like a doctor, right? Doctors never like to go to the doctor. Bartenders never like to admit that they got a hangover or that they
exactly.
got sick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the good advice yet, so.
Good advice?
What good advice?
Aren't bartenders all supposed to give great advice?
Listen, this is what happens. We stick six beers in front of you, and then everything we say sounds like good advice.
Damn it! That's what's going on?
Yeah.
All this time?
Yeah. We don't ever
25
give,
years of my life.
Yeah, we don't ever give advice until you're at least three beers in, and then it at least starts to sound like decent advice. So.
Wow, the secret is out.
Oh. Right. Do we have to re-add Cato? Not put himself.
No, he can do join call and he should be able to hop back on. There he goes.
He says it's wireless.
Well, I added him, so.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I'm impatient.
Mine does it.
I'm impatient.
So are we going to go out on a topic, like for real?
Do you want to do questions? Didn't Tracy get a
question? Wait, Tracy.
I have another one. I was going to sit there and say one. How about GMing for friends versus GMing for strangers, differences in prep, approach, etc.?
Wait, say that again. I drugged out.
GMing for friends versus GMing for strangers. Differences in prep, approach, etc.
A lot fewer inside jokes, and I usually can't be as belligerent, you know, and just mean when I'm DMing for strangers, because you never know how they're going to react to your personality. So I guess I'm a much more reserved DM. So it's not so much a difference in prep for me, and I just completely hijacked answering that.
No, it's okay. We can.
That's okay. I'm gonna cut out your answer later. So does
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I'll be talking about martial arts or something like that.
Yeah.
But no, I mean prep is almost always the same, and it's because prep is always light for me. Prep's an outline with you know a certain amount of monsters and NPCs and stuff like that, and it's about how you use that prep in the game that changes, and so. I think when I'm DMing for people I don't know or people who I have, you know, only kind of met online and not interacted with much, then I'm a much more reserved DM and I'm more straightforward and more just about, okay, it's your turn. Okay, it's your turn, you know, and maybe throw in a little flavor text. But when I'm with my friends, it's half flavor text, half comedy, half really crude humor. And, I drink a lot more. So
I have a similar type of thing. I don't do any different prep, and I don't change my game all that much. What changes is, at the beginning at least, I try to go a little slower, and I come into it with the expectation of having to explain things a little bit more. I lay some ground rules at the very beginning of the session about how I normally operate that maybe aren't typical or someone might not expect. Not rules changes or anything, just the typical, you know, here's how I do combat. You know, I will tell you, I'll ask you, are you done, and then go on, or whatever the case may be, right? But I don't really change prepping, and I think it's just a natural thing that a group that's played together for a long time and that are all considered friends will be doing inside jokes and laughing a little bit more and whatnot. But I don't think – that doesn't mean that I think a group that I don't know is incapable of that. The group that I have right now, face-to-face, 2 years ago I walked into the room and had only spoken to them over email when I gathered them all together and said I wanted to play and run a game. And we started off in the first session and we're pretty good friends now, but it didn't start out like that, obviously, because we didn't know each other. So, you know, I think it's just a natural progression of a group that you'll have more inside jokes, but that doesn't really change the game for me all that much. On a one-to-one basis to compare, it's not all that different in terms of prep and how I run the game. It's just different in terms of group dynamics.
Cato, how about you?
Mike Shea, how about you?
Oh, well, it's Mike Shea. I'd have to say that. Kill all of the PCs when you're playing with strangers because they won't ever see you again.
No, that's Angry DM that you're channeling now.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And I would besides, do my impersonation, but I don't want to offend them anymore than I already do.
Mike Shea would say, to find out more information about this, you can go to slyflourish.com/book and learn about how to change your prep for new players versus people you know.
How do you really feel about him and his book there? Sam?
I think the book has a lot of good tips in it. That's why, you know, we keep pimping it out. Slyflourish.com.
It's a tour de force.
Book. Yeah.
I just
hey, Casey.
I like
what do you think about this topic? Oh, why?
Well, I'll tell you what I think about this topic. If it has anything to do with dungeons, I hate it. And if it's a good idea that Thaddeus said, I think it's terrible because it kills the story. And then if it's and so this morning I got up and I had a piece of toast and then I went to work.
Oh, wow.
On the drive, I listened to a radio show and they talked about puppies for a little while and then they talked about kittens. So I really liked the show. So then I went to work and then we did some programming and I wrote a database that was really complex, but really fun.
I wrote a database?
I don't know.
Tracy, I know where you can send your hate mail.
It's life
send my hate mail. Thaddeus, what the hell are you doing?
I'm wow. drunk.
That was
very
you.
Drunk. So,
Tracy,
Tracy, how do you feel about GMing for public people that you don't know?
Thanks for asking that question. It's a really good one. when I DM for people I don't know, I actually prepare for once. That's always good. That's a good start. I actually am more willing to take risks and potentially kill PCs when it's a group of strangers in a one-shot. I think that's more the difference is between one-shot and campaign. But most of the time when I run a game for strangers, it's a one-shot. So that's another thing. And then, you know, it also depends if they're likely to be strangers amongst themselves versus running for a group of people who know each other, but maybe I'm new to the group. So if I'm just new to the group, I don't have to worry quite so much about trying to get them to work together or dealing with the trust issues that might come up. Where if they're complete strangers to begin with, it's always good to start off with a joke or a very common trope to get them, and hopefully combat, to just get them working together and enjoying the game. It's a lot easier to ease them into the game that way. Where if it's just a bunch of friends, you already know what they like.
Well, I'll be able to, as the old man in the group, I'll wrap up this topic. I don't DM for strangers unless I'm getting paid. And since that never happens, I don't DM for strangers. I'm not comfortable with it. It's too much of a interpersonal thing going on. But my friends, I prep a lot for my friends and I do a lot of, hands-on and props and things like that. So, that's why you never see me doing that for strangers. So. Next question.
I think that's an interesting paradox that Tracy brought up about how if it's a newer group, there aren't the same expectations. And so it's quite possible that many of us would have fewer inhibitions than with our regular game. That's an interesting paradox that you wouldn't necessarily think it would be that way most of the time. Because, you think of friends as these are people that I'm comfortable with and I can hang out with and I don't have to be scared of them making fun of me in a malicious way or something, or, you know, them not being honest with me or something like that. And so you have fewer inhibitions, right? But it's actually the opposite if you're maybe sometimes playing with a group of people that you don't really know because you don't have sort of boundaries that are generated by the interpersonal relationships that already have their patterns set.
Right. I would totally bring out the monster that, you know, maybe a TPK machine out at something that was a convention or a one-shot type campaign, particularly with strangers, because there isn't this like, oh my god, you killed my character thing that goes on afterwards. You know, you don't have to. I'm not going to be crude, but yeah.
Oh come on, everybody else has been on this show.
Well, I'll
you don't
say
have
it
to
because
cuddle afterwards.
See, I just don't want to be the douchebag DM. I don't want the guys coming back saying, man, we had this DM and he was such a douchebag. He killed us all and it was just like unfair and meh. So, I mean, I think that's one, it's an issue that I have. That's why I don't do strangers like that. I just, it's weird. I would have to be at a Thaddeus level of drunk to be able to do that. So.
Hey, I heard my name. Wait, what's going on?
I think for me, the difference there is that, as a player, if I went to a game and I didn't know the DM or the GM and they killed my character. As long as I had fun, I wouldn't walk away from that table saying, oh, that guy was a total douchebag, or, oh, that woman was just a bitch for killing my character. I would never do that, as long as I had fun. Now, if I didn't have fun, it doesn't make a difference whether they killed my character or had a TPK or anything else, because if I wasn't having fun, there are other problems going on there. And they usually don't have very much to do with whether my PC died or not. So I don't know. I don't know. I guess I take exception to that. I don't take exception to that because I think it's a very valid feeling, but I don't have that fear of if I kill a PC, the guy's going to walk away from the table thinking I'm a total douchebag.
Yeah.
And if you're going to bring in a TPK machine, just leave it to the end. So that way they've already gotten their hour or two of, you know, fun, happy time. And then they leave the table crying. It's great.
Wow. I'm gonna have nightmares. I really am. No, my character, Tracy, killed my character. Oh my god.
I have yet to kill a character, so yeah. Players, on the other hand, they're all dead.
See, I guess I just don't worry about that, because if players are gonna leave thinking I'm a douchebag at the table, I know exactly why they're gonna think I'm a douchebag, and it's not because I TPK'd them. It's probably because I made fun of their mom for most of the night.
Wow. No. Do we have another question?
I was gonna say, on that note, we could end.
Yeah, we could. There you go.
Is there another question everybody wants to address? We've got 5 or 10 minutes. We could.
Let me see. I'm looking through. Hey, there's that question about mass combat. I don't know.
That one will take a little longer than 5 minutes. I think it that has a lot of depth to it, actually. However, if somebody really wants to – well, no, never mind.
How do you convince non-gaming friends to try gaming with stories work best?
Oh, That's not a quick one either, unless somebody has a quick one they feel like they could answer that with.
Tell them it's really cool and offer booze.
The only other one I have is maintaining balance within a campaign, making PCs feel powerful but not overpowered, and then power sources and their place in games. Those are the other ones I have.
Well, you got heavy theory questions, didn't you?
Yeah, those are some pretty hefty questions. We should actually keep that list. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So another one would be this is one of Thaddeus's. How would you feel about adding professions and crafting back to 4E and making them separate minor skills?
I wrote a blog post about that, so I think crafting needs to be added back in.
I think crafting has its place. I think that it would have to be done correctly, and I don't think it should be done in a way – now, I haven't thought about this very much, so this might come out wrong and maybe possibly not exactly how I mean it, but let me try anyway. I don't think that crafting should be – put into the game to take the place of the current skill system. I think it should be put into the game in a way that takes advantage of the way the skill system is set up and enhances and augments, but doesn't create whole storylines based on someone's ability to craft. Is that making sense? I don't know if I'm explaining it very well.
Yeah. I think it can be handled. Like not to, you know, take over any of Mike Shea's stuff, but I do have documentation. I did write about crafting and perform skills, so I've linked to the PDF there. So
okay, well, we'll throw that on the show notes as well. What do you think, Tracy?
I don't know. See, I haven't played the older versions in any way, in any extended way, so I don't know why they really need to be at it. So I think you can just, I don't think there has to be rules for it, but if people really want it, I guess they can do it. Mm-hmm.
That's sort of my position, because that's why I say they shouldn't be added in a way where they become sort of the end-all be-all of a particular character's concept or something, and that's the danger of it, right? So in previous editions, like in third edition, you could have like 12 ranks or 20 ranks in a particular crafting skill, and you can be a master armor smith, and you could make a living with that and whatnot. But meanwhile, you're also out, you know, adventuring with these people. I mean, it doesn't always make sense. So and the number of skills and professions that you could throw in, you know, so the reason I have reservations is because I think the skill system is very refined and skills light, and I like that it's skills light. I like that there's only 17 skills that have an impact, and that you can put any other skill, any other activity into the broad range of skills that we have and apply it to one of those 17 skills. With crafting, you have the possibility of just creating every profession known to man at that time in the world, and then you have this vast array of choices, and, you know, is it really necessary? I don't know. But like Tracy said, if you really wanted it, you could definitely do it. I don't think it would necessarily be a problem if that's what the players and the DM wants.
Yeah, I just wonder sometimes if crafting is one of those things that people want because they used to have it, more than it's necessarily a great thing to have in the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that there's, I think some players have a desire to have a signature item that they don't just want to find. That they want to have some, or they may have storyline backgrounds where that's important. I find that, now I don't know about crafting, but I know the perform skill actually is a great role-playing device. And, I mean, it's something the bards lost, I think. I love bards, but I think the 4E bard loses some of its interestingness because of the perform skill having gone away.
But why, though?
Like, anyone can now stand up in the bar and sing and dance if they want to.
No, they can't.
No.
No.
Why
you
not?
You have to roll a diplomacy check and an acrobatics check to see if you can sing and dance.
Now, I don't know.
No?
No, I'm not buying it. So I mean, that doesn't fit it for me. Diplomacy is a different thing than that, as far as I'm concerned. So,
well, that's all up to you.
Well, if they're up there trying to do magic tricks and dancing around and juggling, you might make them roll the bluff as well. I mean,
or Arcana if they're doing little magic tricks.
And then you right. just set the DC harder for you could just set the DC harder for somebody who is not a bard for doing things that are typically bard. I mean, that's another way to do it too. Is that
I would agree with. Yeah, I understand how to fit the skills into what you're doing in the situation. No, I get that. I don't think you do. Oh, wow. Have another drink, Thad.
I just hate having a rule for everything. And I think this is one of those things that is just better taken care of between the DM and the player.
Oh, agreed, yeah.
Than rather having lots of rules. Not that, you know, not that there's anything wrong with making the rules. It's just I definitely wouldn't have wanted it in the core rule set.
Because 7,000 rules for powers isn't.
No, I don't like all the powers either. No,
I'm just kidding. I'm just.
Yeah, I just. There's too many feats. There's too many powers. There's too much stuff that's considered core to me for me. For my taste, I liked it much better when it was simplified with optional things. And I think that goes back to, as well, the narrowing the rules for different games. Like, you know, you don't take from everything, you take from some subset. And they're doing that with the Encounters program. You know, the current one is Essentials only. Before that, it was Dark Sun. And I think in the future, they're going to continue to do that sort of thing. And I think it's a good thing.
I wonder if I can convince him to do shuffle powers in the next one.
No.
Just to spite Tracy.
I am writing the email right now.
Yeah, well, I'll be...
Whatever Thaddeus says, ignore the next few emails.
Yeah. We'll see. I may be going to see the Nutcracker with a few of them here in a few weeks, so...
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Is that a euphemism? Are you going to take out your martial arts
and whip beat ass? Them and beat yeah. them all up. Yeah. I love it that's just something you latched onto. Like
there is none, which is what makes it so funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think we've got probably 2 hours worth of material, so we should probably say goodbye.
Yeah, I'm gonna go.
Yeah, Thaddeus needs to go get sick in the bathroom.
I think I've done enough damage to my reputation for one night.
That Thaddeus, you are a steely-eyed missile man. Don't let anyone tell you any different.
I never do. I apparently go to their house and beat them up with martial arts.
That's right.
All right. Well, I gotta go. I gotta go.
All right.
I gotta go clean up the apartment or something. So.
Yeah. All right, everybody.
Wash your hair.
Yeah, wash the dog. Have my dog wash my hair.
Wow. And all
right then. Yeah. And that's it. Okay. I'm pressing stop.